Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission. Hello, friends. Welcome back. Hope everyone's having a wonderful summer. We have just had a few of our first monsoon rains. Enjoying that.
Very nice. A little cooler.
And enjoying ministry and volunteer teams. But today we're going to continue with part two on money. And in our previous episode, Jesse shared four biblical principles from the New Testament on money and how to give. So to review those, we saw that Christians give. Mm-hmm. Christians are generous.
Part of life.
It's a part of being a believer. Mm-hmm. Number two, in the early church, there was a pattern of giving in community.
Yep.
Giving within the body and sharing with those. Mm-hmm. Third, we saw that there was a pattern of giving to need. Mm-hmm. When there is a need that arises, people gave sacrificially. And lastly, every believer is expected to give with a joyful heart.
Yeah.
Whether you're rich or poor, mm-hmm. whatever the circumstances, we are to give.
Yeah.
And even the reason for being blessed by God was so that we could share more with others.
That's right. Be a blessing to others. Yeah.
So today we're going to talk a bit more about some of the unique challenges of giving in a cross-cultural context. Mm-hmm. So understanding the other cultures.
Right.
And then give some practical tips and examples.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an ongoing, I think it is, like we said maybe last time, one of the most vexing issues in doing the type of ministry that we do. It just comes up over and over again. How do we deal with money? And a lot of it is because of the differences in perspective and differences in culture and differences in economic status. And so while we try to lay the biblical foundation last time, this time we want to talk just a little bit about some of those cross-cultural dynamics, some of the contextual realities. When we're coming into the context that a lot of us are ministering in, where we do come in as we're at a significantly higher economic level than the people that we're ministering among or partnering alongside as believers. Okay? So in addition to the biblical basics, we need to kind of set our perspective contextually as well. So there's a book that has been pretty helpful. It's a somewhat recent book. A lot of our team members actually have been reading through it, people who are doing this work in other parts of South Asia. It's called Ministering in Patronage Cultures by a guy named Jason Georges. Like I said, a lot of teams are kind of processing through this, use it as a lens to help think through this. And the idea around a patronage culture is that just as you're thinking about how does money work in kind of an unequal situation, a situation asymmetrical is what he calls it, where there's somebody who has more significant means and somebody who has less, right? He defines patronage as a reciprocal, asymmetrical relationship. And so that is the reality, right?
Yes.
I mean, we come in, and most of our time on the field, mm-hmm. it's been the case that we have been significantly better off financially than people that we're working mm-hmm. among.
Just with what we're born with.
That's right, yeah. Just what we're born with.
From where we come from in
that's
America.
Right. And even the way that we're supported as we come into these contexts,
right.
It's like, yeah, we step into a much higher economic status even than we have in the U.S. Be solid middle class in the U.S.,
right.
You know.
Right.
When we were in seminary, probably much below that even.
Yeah.
And then to step in as, you know, at least mm-hmm. upper middle class, if mm-hmm. not like lower upper.
Right.
And so to think through, okay, now how then do we interact with people of a lower economic station than us?
Mm-hmm.
This first part is going to be mostly about in the context of other believers. But then mm-hmm. later on, we will talk about some of the practical tips about how we do that with non-believers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about the patron-client relationship, for a variety of reasons, whether it's that relative wealth issue that we talked about, sometimes in South Asia, we find these lingering cultural assumptions about Westerners and about Western culture that I think also gives us, in some communities, kind of a higher status, right? And so we often find ourselves in situations that look like patron-client type situations.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our work, like we said, has been with people who are of a lower economic class than us. And for most middle-class Midwesterners like us, that creates a lot of tension,
mm-hmm.
like interpersonal, internal, I think, tension mm-hmm. as well,
yeah.
is because we are raised to see everybody as equal.
Mm-hmm.
And we are uncomfortable with somehow being perceived as like superior,
mm-hmm.
whether that's economically or by status or whatever it is. And so I think the strength of the book, George's book, is to simply like point out that reality,
mm-hmm.
that we're entering into these cultures for whom patronage is kind of a key idea. They're used to swimming in those waters, right? They're used to negotiating those inequitable financial and status relationships. And so I think for him to just point that out, for us to know where we're at, is a big key. Mm-hmm. Even for us, I think, as we were studying about cross-cultural realities before coming to the field, looking back, just kind of the knowledge of that, even if we don't have it figured out all the way, just kind of having your eyes open to that is a huge benefit, because it helps you to see that what you perceive initially maybe as bad isn't necessarily bad. It's just kind of what it is. And it gives you, I think, a little more sympathy to understand, hey, this is just normal life for the people that we're coming across. Because there are, and he quotes this in the book, there's a couple really good, I think, quotes that kind of summarize, I think, some of the initial struggles that a lot of cross-cultural workers have when they come to the field. He says that sometimes our assumptions about the reasons, even why people are asking us for money, can be skewed, and we can almost like cast them in a bad light for even asking. Georgia says in one place, quote, "Westerners' distaste for patronage can lead to unhealthy views of people who request money. Clients seem like opportunists or manipulators. They are dismissed as dependents or sycophants who leech time and resources," end quote. Now, confession time, that's, we have felt that.
100%.
Right? We have felt that when we were on the field. And I think a lot of that just due to that lack of understanding.
And we've realized that as well. I think in our earlier years, it was almost like we held it against someone if they asked too much.
That's right.
And we felt that like they're trying to take advantage of us.
Right.
And all those things. We have learned that it's acceptable to ask in this culture.
That's right.
And that is not something that people only do to foreigners.
That's right.
They ask each other.
Exactly.
They help each other. That's so normal.
Yeah.
So to not be offended by that.
And I think even if you would step back and take a global perspective, we as Westerners are actually the global outliers in this realm, because we're so individualistic. We're so kind of try to separate these things where money, you know, that's kind of in one realm and relationships is in another. He's got a really good quote about that as well. He says, quote, "But patronage is a financial friendship, an oxymoron for Westerners who separate money and relationships. I've heard Westerners say they just want money, not a relationship. This comment reveals a deep-seated cultural assumption. Money and relationships should not mingle," end quote. So I think that really points out a good, just a good cultural assumption that we're bringing to the table as well, that there isn't also necessarily biblical, not right or wrong, although I think many times it can be wrong, the way that we approach that. And so just to recognize that money is a currency of relationship, and a legitimate one. It's not illegitimate or bad for people to ask money, to make requests when they have legitimate needs. And so I think, again, that is the big strength of the book. I would recommend reading the book just for that, just to have maybe your eyes opened. And many of those who are reading the book, man, they've been on the field for a while. And I think it's just help kind of go back and process some of their own thinking about money.
I think understanding the norm for a lot of our lower class friends here, when you don't have a bank account, you don't have a savings account in your life at all. And so anytime you have a big medical bill, or you just have that big school fee at the beginning of the year, you don't have a savings account. You've never been in a position to be able to store up a lot of extra money. And so that's a big reason why it's so common. When grandma gets sick, you ask everyone you know for help. And that's the savings account. That's just the way you cover the big medical bills.
That's it.
And when we say no, then we are the outlier. And we are communicating a lack of love and care.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people in the majority world are living one emergency away from basically like financial ruin. If it is a big medical bill or something like that, there's not all the padding and the cushioning that we have in the U.S., whether it's insurance or a savings account or whatever it is. Those things just aren't there among most of the people that we're ministering with. So now, knowing that that is there, knowing that that context is in the background, I think the question then is like, okay, what do we do with that? If we have this knowledge, we're in these relationships, we're getting to know these people, like what do we actually do with it? How do we interact in a patron-client environment? And this is actually, with regards to the book, I really appreciate his insight and kind of the overall thinking that it sparks. But I do take exception with a lot of what George's maybe even argues from the scriptures and how he would just argue for some of the application. And so I would just put that out there as a bit of a caveat with this book, is that I think, so George is, he's one of the voices and one of the writers within the kind of honor shame movement. There's been lots of books written over the past few years about how we need to take into account honor shame dynamics when we're doing cross-cultural ministry. And so the idea of the patron client is really that idea of honor shame applied to economic realities in those contexts. And I think what I've seen in that literature is a tendency to see that kind of thinking everywhere, even kind of where it's not, right? I mean, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, that kind of thinking. And I think there's an extent to which he's done that with the Bible as well. Like every kind of economic relationship looks like patronage. And so I think there's a tendency maybe to overinterpret that.
Yeah.
And so in thinking about it and even trying to apply it for us, I think this applies both to honor shame thinking and patron client thinking. I think the actually more appropriate biblical metaphor is just family, because it covers a lot of the same ground.
Yeah.
But there again, we need to check our own Western conceptions of family and think about, okay, what, like biblically and even the majority world, their concepts of family and all the things that come with that is much closer to the biblical world than we are in the Western world.
Yes.
So all that to say, I think that it helps think through maybe even more from the right heart and right attitude about how we should be approaching these. Because patron-client sounds a little businesslike.
Oh, way too much.
Right? And honor-shame sounds a little too like sociological. They're more like sociological categories, I think, sometimes as opposed to like biblical categories.
Right. And we certainly would never refer to our friends and partners here as our clients. So let's make that clear.
That is a bad, bad decision. Definitely. So I think with that in mind then, kind of with some of that background, hopefully with that guiding metaphor of family, to where to me what that communicates then is a heart and an attitude when I enter into a relationship or when we're talking about finances. Yes, maybe I am a person of superior means economically and maybe even social status or whatever. But with believers, we're part of the same family. Mm-hmm. I may be the big brother, right? And I think that is maybe even in South Asia, I'd find that to be a more culturally appropriate thing within the,
the
household
uncle.
Of God. Right,
yeah.
Or the uncle, something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm still brother age, right? Big brother age for most of the people.
Yes,
starting
absolutely.
Starting to slip into uncle stage maybe a little bit. But just thinking about it that way, like how would you think about your little brother? How would you think about your nephew?
Right.
And seeing your involvement not only as, hey, I can address this need, but I can do something that will benefit them
long-term
for their lives.
In their life.
Right. I want to see the betterment of their lives long term because we're in this together as family.
And I think that's an important point. The majority of the examples in our life and that we can talk about are in the context of a loving relationship.
Yeah, right. There's a discipleship relationship there. There's mentoring. There's
so it's not just
the same community.
Giving money.
Right.
It's in the context of doing ministry together, living life together, cooking together, eating together, loving each other's kids, maybe going on a little trip together, you know, riding the train together. Mm-hmm. So it's all part of this loving relationship.
Yeah. And that's why I think maybe one of the first and most practical things to look for is whenever you're giving, it needs to be in the context of the body somehow. It needs to be in the context of God's family, not just this one-on-one type thing. There's just been all kinds of unhealthy ways that we have seen maybe one local believer approaching one international worker and kind of just making this one one-to-one deal. And I think for the most part, what we want to pursue to look back to that biblical foundation is to say, we want to do this in community, as a family, in the open, getting inviting insight from both other local believers and other believers on your team, and just making it a family deal.
And I would give a word of encouragement if there are listeners that haven't always done it right or are new and trying to figure it out. We have some really good examples of messing this up.
Really good examples.
We have wasted money. I mean, if you want to be blunt about it.
That's pretty
blunt. We have found out later that we gave and it wasn't helpful.
Right.
And that person wasn't a trustworthy person.
Or we were foolish and just gave
foolishly. Or we were foolish. Yeah. Foolish, and we should have had more eyes on it.
That's right.
Our hearts were in the right place. Yeah. We were trying to help and we didn't know. And we learned from it. It's part of it.
Yeah.
It's part of growing and learning in a new context. And we're going to entrust that to the Lord and keep growing.
Yeah, that's right. I think that there is just that, as we look back at those, to the point, we probably could have avoided a lot of that had we been more intentional about inviting local insight.
Yes.
And doing it more in community.
So learn from our mistakes so you don't have to make such big ones.
We don't want you to have any good examples of failing.
Exactly.
Right?
Well, I just wanted to share some examples from our life, and I've just asked around to a few other coworkers on the field. I think many people in our shoes, we want opportunities to be generous. Mm-hmm. We see people in our lives. Mm-hmm. I'll just divide it into two categories. One would be non-believers that are trustworthy in a long-term relationship with us. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's our house helper.
Right.
Maybe it's a neighbor. Mm-hmm. But people that we know long-term and love and we want to bless.
Yeah.
And we're just thinking, how can I do it in a healthy, wise way?
Yeah.
The other category would be national partners. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm talking about people we've known for more than a year. Mm-hmm. People that, from the best of our understanding, they love the Lord. Mm-hmm. They are not in it to get rich.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And they're probably living with very small means. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, I'll give some examples.
Yeah.
And this can just stir up ideas. Mm-hmm. And I will give a big disclaimer. This is not because I feel like I'm awesome at this.
Right.
It's not at all. And I pray that the Lord would help grow us in generosity.
Yeah. And to recognize that many of the things that we have learned and implemented about generosity, we've actually learned from national believers.
Yes, and continue to.
Yeah.
Yes. So a few examples of giving to people that we, in our life, that we have good relationships with, that have needs. Many of us on the field have house helpers, and I have had long-term trustworthy house helpers that I love and that I want to bless. Sometimes.
Let me say something about that as well.
Go for it.
As you're going into it. Just because house helpers as well, it feels funny sometimes to an American audience to even be talking about this because that's just like the signal of, oh, wow, these people have house helpers.
Right. We're living it up.
Exactly. It's very, very common. Okay, it's very like middle class type thing in South Asia to have one. But what I would say even more specifically is that you are very diligent about vetting for the right house helper.
Yes.
And I say that because sometimes we feel obligated like immediately in these relationships that maybe aren't, it's maybe not the best.
Not the best person to have as your house helper.
That's right.
Yes.
And people then, because of some of that, maybe
guilt
or whatever,
over our wealth, we just feel like we should stay in it.
That's right.
And keep
allow
giving.
It to go on. And so all that to say, just kind of frame it a little bit to say, when Shani is saying trustworthy, really solid house helpers, we have had those. And it's because she has not just, I think, been particular about choosing, but also even like working with them and developing them over the course of that, and building that relationship and being very good with them along the way.
Thank you. And God has given us wonderful people.
Yeah. That's—
in our previous city, my house helper would show up for work and I would surprise her. I maybe did this twice a year and would say, you're not working today, we're going out. Mm. And I would take her out for lunch and I would take her to a kind of like local Walmart and have her pick out stuff for her family, a clothing set for her girls, some kitchen supplies. It was a very low financial investment for me, this whole outing. But it made her feel loved. It gave me a way to help.
Yeah.
It allowed me to buy things that she would truly use. Mm. And I took her to a very simple place. Mm-hmm. And I invested in our relationship and learned about her life.
Yeah.
Because in my house, she's not going to relax. Mm-hmm. She's not going to sit very long and talk to me.
And she's, just to clarify, a non-believer.
She's a non-believer. Yeah. And I still have a good relationship with her. We
After
still
we've
call
moved from
each
that city.
Other. We moved. And then we gave her, for us, like a pretty big chunk of money to help her buy a house before we left.
Yeah.
And it was, again, like Jesse said, this is a way we can bless her long term. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a mother or an aunt or a big sister who could do that for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a new family.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that we were able to do that for her.
Yeah.
I pray that she knows Jesus one day. Mm-hmm. She knows so many Bible stories. That's another topic. And then I would say with that, medical bills mm-hmm. and school fees are two very common large expenses for our friends and partners here. And I know even for our teammates, that is a common way to help.
Yep.
And so many people do that, and I think it's great and that we should do it. And then I wanted to give a few examples of giving to Bless National Partners. Mm-hmm. And again, I know there's a big fear of dependency. Along with that, mm-hmm. there is an aspect, I feel, of almost being like spiritual parents sometimes.
Yeah. Or the big brother and sister.
Or the big brother and sister, or uncle and aunt. And so again, in those situations, there's a desire in my heart. Mm-hmm. When I see a young couple who's mm-hmm. serving the Lord faithfully, mm-hmm. and they live in a tiny room,
right.
and they're doing their best, mm-hmm. and she's living on a tiny budget. She has to be careful with every rupee she spends every week to not go over her weekly food budget.
Yep.
She can't go out and buy a kg of apples mm-hmm. if she wants to,
right.
you know. In those situations, I just look for ways to bless mm-hmm. them on an ongoing basis.
Yep.
If I'm going to their house, I'm going to bring a couple bags of fruit.
Right.
Or maybe I'll bring a bag of nuts.
Right.
Those are very common, acceptable gifts here. Again, this is in context of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take them out on special outings sometimes,
right.
whether that's to a zoo or a park or a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And even that, being wise about the level of mm-hmm. niceness of the restaurant.
Right.
Because we want it to be something they enjoy,
mm-hmm.
but not something that they're like, I can't believe these people pay that much
that's
on
right.
food. And they just can't get over that. And
right.
it feels like we're throwing our money away.
Right.
So I do think there can be a bit of wisdom mm-hmm. used there. We have paid for overnight hotel stays, especially mm-hmm. for brand new married couples.
Yeah.
Kind of a little mini honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these are not big investments.
Sure.
These are just little things over the 17 years mm-hmm. of having people in our life, helping people with their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
We were basically kind of the parents in a wedding for a brother whose parents had rejected him.
Yep.
And so that included buying a wedding dress mm-hmm. and helping them get a hotel stay because we did not want their first night to be at our house. It also included everybody getting ready at our house and
all the stuff.
Having the... I mean, extra parties there mm-hmm.
And some confusion at the wedding when we got introduced as the groom's parents.
Yes. Somehow and
a little mix up there.
Lots of wonderful, awesome memories and also some stress.
Yeah,
let's just
of course.
Be honest. Helping people with home improvement projects.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine I just was talking to, she said she's a coworker, American coworker. She said her mom pays for her National Partner's daughter's school fees.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's just a relationship they've had. And so there are just ways to bless people in big and small ways.
That's right.
Some of the bigger ways are like giving them a down payment on mm-hmm. a house or buying a motorcycle for a brother who is riding his bike to lots of different villages. And we see a motorcycle mm-hmm. would help him and help the work.
That's right.
And then those small ways of, I have another teammate who throws birthday parties for her partner's kids. And she does it with such thoughtfulness.
Blows it out.
And there's decorations and games and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because she loves her partners and she's treating them like family.
That's right. Like family.
Christmas gifts.
Mm-hmm.
We go, we take a big shopping trip here and we just buy gifts for a lot of people in our life. Again, this isn't a huge financial investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing love.
Yeah.
And it's a way to bless them. Birthday gifts or even money on their birthday.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, many times mine are late because I'm terrible at remembering birthdays.
Mm.
So usually it's the day of and I find out. And the next time I see that person, I give the late gift.
You do that a lot.
Better late than never.
There you go.
But why not go ahead and seize that opportunity to show love and bless someone when we come back from the States, bringing someone a watch.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an expensive watch in an American context, but here it's
just a good watch.
Yep. It's nice. And even just coming back from trips within our context here, you can bring the cashews, the peanut brittle, whatever it is.
Right.
There's just so many ways to... along the way, find ways to bless people who don't have that freedom in their life.
That's right. Yep.
And whether this is creating dependency or not. I don't know. Maybe somebody would say it is. But if someone's out doing ministry with me, I pay for the auto. Mm-hmm. I pay for the snack along the, the transportation, the snack along the side of the street.
Sure.
So those are just a few examples from our life of ways in the context of relationships to have those maybe more rare big gifts where we just feel like God's leading us to do that. We talk about it. It's not a quick decision. Mm-hmm. Or those just along the way, birthday gifts, food of any kind, taking people out for dinner, ways to bless
just
our
blessing,
people.
Treating them like family, like you said. I think just that key as well, right? Treating them like family. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a there's kind of another level of another category, so to speak, of this. Mm-hmm. And that's when you do enter into actual like long-term ministry support or financial relationships. And so there are some times when that's appropriate, whether that's with a national partner or some kind of ministry that you're going to, you know, come alongside of. And those are times when it is important, keeping in mind there's a relationship there, there's a family relationship. Mm-hmm. But there's also times for like clarity, financial clarity and accountability. Mm-hmm. And so what we found as well is it can be a bit difficult to negotiate and navigate sometimes. But over time, we find that everybody appreciates just as clear as you can be to say up front, we're going to set the terms. It's going to be this amount. It's going to be for this period of time. There's always a time defined period to say, hey, if it's a ministry partnership, you know, the support's going to be for this year and then we'll reevaluate at the year or whatever that looks like. But for the terms to be very clear, for it to be time defined as well. And again, I think for it to be done in the context of community, other people knowing about what's going on and not being sort of a one-to-one thing. And then we've also found, just in general, in our work, we have stayed away for the most part from supporting local pastors to pastor local churches. That money that we give ministry-wise is, as much as we can, is going towards multiplication as opposed to local pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean we don't support local pastoral ministry. Obviously, we do. We feel like, though, biblically, that that is to be provided for in the context of the local church, in the community. Whereas things that go outside, that are multiplying the kingdom work, whether locally or in new places, that that follows that pattern that we saw in last week's episode when the work of the sent out ones is supported by local churches. The church in Philippi, the churches of Macedonia, they sent to support Paul in the midst of the work that he was doing. And what he was doing was going and doing that foundation laying, sent out apostolic work. And so as we think about where our money primarily should go in terms of partnership and doing ministry, is going towards multiplying the kingdom through sent out ones, through church planting, multiplication, through training, things like that. Mm-hmm. That is a way we've found over time, I think, to protect that financial integrity and independence and even incentivize giving at the local level so that local churches themselves aren't dependent on you know, what's coming from outside. Now, that's all kinds of sticky and we're still kind of negotiating the realities of that from time to time. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do in that giving and giving to multiplication as opposed to local church ministry, we're trying to set local churches on a trajectory of taking on more and more of that themselves, right? Our long-term goal, our long-term aim when we look at the work is what we call local ownership of the core missionary task for every people in place. And so, and this is actually where one of my beefs with the whole patron-client metaphor as well, is that we don't want that to stay static. We don't want to be the patrons over time. But over time, like increasingly our national partners, our leaders, our brothers and sisters, our churches, they're actually leveling up to become the patrons, right? Mm-hmm. And they're becoming patrons to others. Mm-hmm. And where we're maybe moving more into like an uncle sort of role, you know, they're stepping into the big brother and big sister role, that kind of thing. And so to see that development, like our giving is supposed to be encouraging that kind of growth. So some of the ways we've tried to do that as well, even in those avenues I'm talking about of giving towards multiplication, is to say, let's figure out a way to give towards something that actually incentivizes local church giving. So we've done a lot of matching projects. Mm-hmm. If there's a ministry initiative they want to do, we say, hey, you and your churches and your leaders, you raise as much money as you can. Whatever you raise, we'll match it. And so we're incentivizing their involvement. Yes. So that's one of our kind of keystones as well, is to say, We want local believer, local family involvement in whatever giving there is.
Yes.
So that means we usually don't give 100% of the ask. We're usually giving some proportion or doing some kind of matching, yes, asking them to contribute. So some of those kind of guidelines, mm-hmm, along the way have been helpful.
And that's a great way to get a stateside church involved.
Yeah.
That we can connect them with a certain ministry or church or network here, mm-hmm, and then they can be the ones actually providing those funds. Mm-hmm. And they can feel connected to that work and be praying for that work and, yeah, even have relationship, mm-hmm, with the leaders.
Right.
And,
yeah,
that can be a way they partner with us.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that, again, keeping in mind, like, what's our goal? What's our goal over time? Mm-hmm. Our goal over time is that increasingly these national believers would become the patrons or the big brothers, mm-hmm, however you want to put it, where they are, mm-hmm, owning it more and more. And the reason that we can believe that and the reason that we can work towards that is because if there is a sense in which the patron-client thing really does apply, it's between God and us. God is the patron. He is the father, right? Mm-hmm. And we are the clients, the children, however you want to put it. And that's actually a permanent, mm-hmm, setup, right? So, mm-hmm, we are supposed to grow in that as well as his children, where we're giving as well. But everything comes from him. Mm-hmm. The generosity that we are called to emulate is because of the generosity that's been shown to us through Christ. Mm-hmm. And so we can encourage and even challenge national believers sometimes to give, because we're not relying on their generosity or on their means. We're relying on the means and the resources of our Heavenly Father, mm-hmm, which are limitless, right? There's no end to them. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we can, even with boldness sometimes, say to churches and people who otherwise seem like we would be hesitant to request anything out of them because of their financial situation. But we can still say, no, we're called to give. Because our Heavenly Father has blessed us. He's blessed us to be a blessing to others. Mm-hmm. He's generous with us so that we can be generous to others. Mm-hmm. And to watch and see, as we've seen over and over again over the years, as people do honor that and give, how the Lord blesses them, mm-hmm, to be able to be a blessing to others.
I thought I would share a few general principles to add to those. Mm-hmm. One is, don't give a loan of an amount that you already think that person's going to struggle to repay you for.
Yeah.
Money and loans can spoil a relationship very easily.
Yeah.
And so especially if I have a national partner that we're really working with, mm-hmm, I do not want to give a big loan, right, that's going to be hanging over this person's head. Right. And even though I'm not being demanding maybe, mm-hmm, about it, it's just going to affect the relationship. Yeah. It's very common here for someone to come and say, I need 20,000 rupees for my child's school fees tomorrow.
Did that just happen today?
It did.
Might have.
That's a big, big loan, mm-hmm, for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. We don't have to rush into anything. We can pray about it,
yeah,
talk about it as a couple. One solution, mm-hmm, is to, if again, this is in the context of someone you know well, mm-hmm, and it's a good relationship. That's what I'm talking about, yep, here. I'm not talking about someone, yeah, random who comes and asks you.
That does happen too.
Which also happens. Mm-hmm. In situations like that, oftentimes we will give them a certain amount, mm-hmm, as a gift.
Right.
Just because we love them, yeah, and we want to be generous, mm-hmm, and God has blessed us so much. And then maybe the remaining amount as a loan, mm-hmm, when there is a clear path for them, right, to pay us back for that.
Yes. The example in question, this person is on salary. And so there's, yes, a regular, very clear way to, yes, do that repayment, right?
Yes. And a couple other just random ones from our mistakes. Don't give people your junky hand-me-downs.
Mm.
Gosh. Buy them nice gifts.
Wish I could take those back.
Okay. Work together as a couple. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you're married, sometimes I feel led to give in a certain way. Mm. And we talk about it. Sometimes Jesse feels led to give.
Yeah.
But I think we want to support one another in being generous. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like Jesse's more generous than me, mm-hmm, but I do my best to not hold it back, mm-hmm, because I don't want to in any way hinder his faith or his generosity. The last one is just in the daily life of living here, try to get over any kind of consistent suspicion that you're being ripped off because you're a foreigner.
Yeah.
And don't let that be a big stress in your life.
Yep. Just get over it.
Get over it And if your rickshaw driver made 50 extra rupees off you today, if that's what you're worried about, just remember the tiny room he's going home to sleep in.
Yeah.
He's not living in luxury over it.
Yeah.
So don't let that be a big stress to you.
Yeah.
And instead have compassion for the people around you.
At the very least, even if you can't get those feelings of compassion going, at the very least, just let it go. And again, this is a voice of experience here. There have been many road rage incidents of that just anger over what amounts to basically like 50 cents. Just let it go. In closing, I would say that we are in the city that we're in now, for the first time in our careers, the inequity aspect of this, or the, what's it called, asymmetric aspect of this financial relationship is actually not as pronounced as it has been before. Meaning, we're now working with people who are basically our economic peers and even superior to us.
Yes, one of our groups.
One section of our work in the city, that's right, yeah. And so that's those dynamics change considerably.
Very different, yes.
We're no longer like patron client,
no.
Big brother, little brother, whatever you want to call it.
We're peers.
Peers.
Or sometimes we're the little brother.
Exactly. And that's part of, I think, you know, looking at it as family, that's the benefit of it, is that it's not like these stable, static roles all the time. Mm-hmm. That there are roles and relationships where we feel like we are being blessed. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
Yes.
We should be the ones who
absolutely
are in need.
Yes.
And even to think about, you know, even beyond money, there's been so many times in our time on the field, we have been the recipients, again, maybe not of some kind of financial help, but of incalculable, you know, social influence, whatever it was, that we got helped by locals to do that, where we were in the position of need and they were able to provide for it. That's such a great relationship builder to be to be provided for, to
absolutely
be needy in that way.
Yeah, to let people serve you and love on you.
That's right. And now there's even more opportunities for this in that one section of society we're working with in the city where, like we said, we're ministering alongside and among people who are our economic peers or even above. I'm looking forward to getting blessed by that.
Okay? Yes.
You know? Hey, last thing. This is our 50th episode. Did you
congrats
know that? It's our 50th
very
episode. So we do this because we feel like the Lord has given us this burden to be able to bless the church, and particularly sent out ones and senders of sent out ones.
And we enjoy it a lot.
We do enjoy it. Yeah, definitely. But if you get a chance, if this has been a blessing to you, helpful to you, pass it along to some friends. Leave us a review. Hit us up on whatever you do that on.
And be encouraged in your giving and your relationships on the field. It's messy. It's hard. Mm. We haven't figured it all out.
Yeah.
But we trust the Lord to guide us and use us to be a blessing to others.
That's right. Thanks,
y'all. Thanks, friends.